Hello, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, the Laser Time Network's only Simpsons podcast, where we say a noble podcast and biggins the smallest man. And we're all pretty small men here, I think.
I like it.
And today we're going to be talking about the episode Bart the Genius, a season one episode. And should I throw it over to Chris for what happened during this episode's air date,
That's
which
right.
I believe was early 1990.
This week in Simpsons News, Bart the Genius aired on January 14th, 1990. This week in the news, Born on the 4th of July is at the top of the box office. The Ford Motor Company pledges to add a driver and front seat airbag standard in all of its cars. And Ice Cube announces plans to leave NWA, a group millions of white hip-hop fans are happy to have it accepted, an instantly recognizable abbreviation for.
And the Are We There Yet franchise was born.
Yes.
Yeah, wow.
Correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was ready to give it to Eazy-E, man.
So what happened on this episode? Well, basically, in these season one episodes, you'll find that the titles describe the premises completely.
Well, I love the titling here more than I, because right now it is, the titling is so punny when you see it posted on like a website. Like,
you mean like current episodes?
Oh, yeah,
they work too
awful.
Hard on it.
Yeah, I feel like they work themselves. Like, we thought of the episode title. Let's make an episode out of this title.
Yeah.
But it's just like Bart the X
and like
Homer the Y.
Yeah, and three episodes later will be Bart the General, and I'm like, I guarantee that would have been Bart of War.
Yeah, for sure.
If it was named now.
If these episode titles were revealed to the public and they were seen anywhere in 1989 or 1990, they would be a little more clever. But in this case,
no,
it's Bart the Genius. And in case you weren't aware of this episode, well, Bart pretends to be a genius, gets enrolled in this kind of progressive school, and they figure out he's not a genius, and antics ensue. I think that's basically what we can
Bobby,
say about this episode.
I lost my fucking mind. You've only heard the first episode at this point. If you don't know the drama behind it, that was the seventh episode in production order.
The Christmas one.
I'm assuming I'm talking to Simpsons fans here.
I hope so.
The Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire, the Christmas episode, looks like a fourth or fifth season episode compared to this. This is your pilot.
It is, for sure.
It is so rough, it is so ugly, and nothing is familiar.
This and Some Enchanted Evening were both the first in production. This and Some Enchanted Evening were both the first in production, and the story is that Some Enchanted Evening came back in such a horrible state that they thought, we won't even premiere in 1990.
I don't think they should have premiered this one.
They apparently felt Bart the Genius was acceptable and airable.
I shouldn't say, it's not bad.
No.
It's not a bad episode.
There are worse ones in this season.
You wouldn't recognize this as an episode of The Simpsons at all, where I think you can recognize Simpsons Roasting on an Open Fire.
I think out of any episode, it is the most like the Tracy Ullman shorts of any of them.
Yes. Yeah. There's the weird gradient on all the walls.
Scenes just feel like shorts. When they go to the opera, that just feels like a Tracy Ullman.
Oh, for sure.
I have clips here as proof. shit, I have... I forgot recording these clips, what they are. But what the episode involves what? What is the
Bart cheats off of Martin Prince's aptitude test, and he is recognized as a genius, although Martin never was. He was never removed
at
from
all
the school.
When the mistake is revealed.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that watching the whole show again. I thought, this school still exists, and they apparently still have a system to recruit children into it, so why didn't Martin go there? Why didn't Lisa go there? It's weird that Dr. J. Lauren Pryor didn't show back up again and do that.
I have notes. I did full disclosure, I was so happy after recording our first episode.
Oh, awesome.
I, like a week ago, did all the preparation. And I was a little drinky and excited, and I forgot what all my notes mean, what all these noises, what all these sounds are.
I think you texted me and you said you're going to lose your mind after you watch this episode.
This episode was so rough.
I think Homer's Odyssey, I lost my mind more, but we can talk about that
later.
Put
yourself in the position of an executive who has to greenlight a show, and you may not have done it with Bart the Genius.
We'll
get into the commentary, but I believe Barry Diller, who was running Fox, was watching the episode, and he was like, you're going to score this, right?
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, music.
Music,
oh,
yes.
There are so many scenes of just silence.
It's pretty awkward.
This is a later clip in the episode, but I just have it in all caps called fucking footsteps.
Oh, no.
Those are the footsteps.
Don't worry, son. You can have mine. Here, let me show you how to put on a tie. The hook goes over the top, and these things go in there.
Thanks, Dad.
That's not only are there like clomp clomps, but Bart's feet are squeaking and Homer's feet are making a noise.
Yeah, I mean,
it's all just
that's them stepping around.
There's a lot of overthought sound effects, and then no thought to other
sounds.
And I cut
that down.
Sound essential.
I cut that down.
This episode ends on some great Foley work we'll get into later, but in that case, yeah, like I feel like the footsteps in these first season episodes, you always hear them,
yes.
And they're always so distracting.
Oh, and I don't know if it'll be able to pick up on audio, but like one of my notes is that like we do a podcast. I'm very sensitive to audio issues. Of all the episodes, this feels like. These guys are recording in a garage. There's echo everywhere.
Yeah,
like everybody sounds terrible. But this is also the first show with an open, as far as first goes.
Mm-hmm.
The first show with an opening.
Yeah, and technically first Seymour, though not the first we've seen. First production Seymour Skinner, but. Yeah, okay, that Scrabble opening, I like...
Ujibo, still remember it.
Whenever I watch these, they do take me back so far to... They've taken me back to where I was when they aired, at least in a little bit, because I remember watching the Scrabble bit thinking, like, what is Scrabble? And my mom had to explain... my mom explained it to me and that she was... A big fan of Scrabble. She just doesn't get to play as much as she does.
When two people love each other very much and have a Milton Bradley factory next to them.
I've since had very intense Scrabble games with my mom, like intense to the point of, you know, they say, no, pull out the dictionary. Fuck you. And they're like, oh, what's this? Oh, that dictionary's dumb. We're playing out of this dictionary.
If it speaks to what kind of nerddom I grew up in, I've played a lot of games. Scrabble is the only one that I've ever been present at a board being flipped over.
Oh,
and
man.
Someone yelling, fuck
tiles
this, I'm out.
Flying everywhere, yes. Like
shrapnel.
I mean,
I've seen that with I've seen that with Monopoly as well.
I have Bart's dialogue from the beginning.
Okay.
Tell me, Bart, are you ever bored in school?
Oh, you bet.
Mm-hmm. Ever feel a little frustrated?
Sir?
Uh-huh. Do you ever dream of leaving your class to pursue your own intellectual development on an independent basis?
Wow, it's like you're reading my mind, man.
So some of this makes me think that Harry Shearer wasn't utilized as a lot of main characters because...
Yeah.
You'll hear Mr. Burns in the next episode, I think, and that is that's the guidance counselor who's used more than once in the show.
Yeah, not
he
more than thrice.
So
I think.
Yeah, I think his three appearances is this. Bart gets an F in the second season.
I'm thinking, and then
the
Lisa
flashbacks.
Sachs, right?
Lisa Sachs.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to
sleep. If we're talking Burns prime, how we think Burns? Like, I think Burns sounds way too old right now. He sounds way too much like Ronald Reagan in the beginning. That character sounds exactly like Burns proper.
It was really distracting. I was like, is this Mr. Burns in like Lauren Pryor cosplay?
Yes,
is what I was asking
and
myself.
And I have another clip called "Horrible Kitchen Dialogue."
Oh,
I don't know what it is.
How about a tie, son? Everybody knows boy geniuses wear ties.
Oh, it's stifling my creativity, Dad.
Sorry, boy.
Bart, this is a big day for you. Why don't you eat something a little more nutritious?
Nonsense, Marge. Frosty Krusty Flakes are what got him where he is today. It could be one of these chemicals here that makes him so smart.
That's no
case. Lisa, maybe you should try some of this.
Homer?
I'm just saying, why not have two geniuses in the family? Sort of a spare in case Bart's brain blows up.
You see, like...
It sounds like a Nerdist podcast. Like somebody stuck a recording thing down in the middle of the room and one person was way closer.
Yeah, I don't know if they recorded together at this point. I think early on they might have.
Yeah,
but like... I mean, we mentioned this on a later episode, I think, but people say Walter Matthau is the inspiration for this Homer voice, but I hear a lot of Jackie Gleason and Art Carney. It's like, you gotta eat the cereal, boy. It's really good.
Eat it, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also that scene kicks me to a note I made from it, which is in all the ones we've been watching so far, is that Marge is a useless character. She is has no,
well, she has no
life.
Definition.
She's just like, oh, okay.
She kind of gets on even more than normal, and that's not the joke. She just is kind of forgotten about.
Yeah, and people just give her an aside like, oh, what's this? What are you doing? Another Marge, shut up. Okay. I'll go over here.
She just kind of leaves the scene, right? Yeah.
And also, speaking of how women were portrayed in it, I did wonder if it was meant as a joke that Lisa's genius, even in this episode, is obvious. It's just like, she's clearly the genius in the family, but why is nobody recognizing
her? And you can barely hear it in that clip, because that is the funniest joke, is that Homer's recommending she eat shitty cereal to be smarter when she's the smartest.
I think Lisa on Ice... tackled that idea much, much better, but that's like 6 years from now. But I can see echoes of that scene in this one.
In terms of podcast recording or production?
maybe both. I don't know.
It is weird to see moments that, you know, will influence them later or just little things that you're like, you're starting to find what you want to do. But all these conversations also just has these I think the message of the episode is just very lame or just boring, which is, oh, they want to put you in a box, and but no box is right for you, and even the geniuses are going to bully you, and it's just, and
it was weird that I didn't feel like a consistent, there was no consistent, like, through line in this episode. No. Like, there was no, like, where does Bart belong? We don't know.
Well,
like,
this is also at the when Bart is the focus of the show.
Yeah.
Like, we were introduced to this, a Homer episode, but Bart has a lot of episodes early on.
He does, yeah. And I don't know if they were predicting he would be a breakout character or what.
Good on them, I guess. Yeah. I mean, the merchandise would dictate, like, they may have had that ready, assuming Bart would be a breakout character.
Oh, speaking of first, I mean, well, this has tons of firsts, like
tons
Mrs. Krabappel.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yes.
That is such a season one name. I think it's funny now that it's stuck around, but
I thought it's a one-joke name.
It
was. I thought the name was hilarious when I was a little kid.
Yeah,
it sounds like Krabappel. It's so
you can
funny.
Hear the, you can hear the writers on the commentary regret, like, we're committed to this joke forever. This one joke for one episode. Right. Oh yeah, his teacher's name is Mrs. Krabappel.
I have a clip because not only it's our introduction to Mrs. Krabappel, and then Bart. We've said the plot of the episode. Bart gets moved to another school for geniuses.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We're introduced to Miss Krabappel, legendary Marcia Wallace, I believe.
Marcia Wallace, yeah.
Marcia Wallace.
Yeah, R.I.P.
R.I.P. She died somewhat recently. So it bothers me so much that we're introduced to Bart's real teacher, and then he gets moved over to the genius class and meets Miss Milan, spelled Melon.
Oh, is that the joke? I wasn't even aware of that.
I guess.
Okay. I think it is
the
joke.
It is the exact same voice actor.
And, like, Melon is like your head, right? So
yes.
It's a school for brain. Okay, I get
God,
it.
God, this show is...
1990.
See, they overthink
There's nothing that leads me to believe The Simpsons is going to be as groundbreaking as it is in this episode.
It's just a lot of lame
And not only that, they cast Marcia Wallace as Miss Milan. We just met Bart's first teacher.
She sounds like a nicer Mrs. Krabappel.
She sounds the exact same.
But it felt like that was the message of, like, oh, it's the same teacher.
I don't think they were thinking that far.
You think
ahead.
They were just lazy in the cast?
I wasn't sure.
I think she was probably hired for a one-shot, because who knows who Bart's teacher was going to be.
Yeah.
But here's a clip of Miss Milan.
You must be Bart Simpson. I'm Ms. Milan, your learning coordinator. Let me say right at the start that we have one rule here. Make your own rules. If you feel sleepy, take a nap. If you get bored, feel free to take out a book and start reading.
Move faster.
What should I read, ma'am?
Why, anything you want, Bart.
Oof, that sound.
Oh.
A comic book? How did this get mixed in here? We used it last week as a prop in a film we made about illiteracy.
Okay.
When you think of everything about good delivery and pacing, like, none of that is evident from that.
Very,
that,
like,
is one scene.
It's a very storybook reading, like, and then this happened, and then this happened. Like, I don't want to seem like we're ragging too much on this because we're viewing it from a 2015 perspective.
For sure.
But there are some scenes in this episode that drag, and nothing drags longer than that opera scene.
Yes.
Where
interminable.
Marge, Marge takes them to the opera because, you know, that now they're a cultured, intelligent family. They have to endure this, like, high class entertainment.
I got a
and
clip of
it. Is just nothing but sight gags that don't really work, set to, like, a weird recording of Carmen.
And once they make their first fart joke, I was like, okay, got it. You're going to make noises during the opera.
If you can believe it, my drunk notes, that is in all caps, that Homer makes a armpit fart noise through his three pieces.
I was so impressed, like, by that, yeah.
How did you do that, sir?
Yeah.
Well, when you listen to the commentary, they're very disappointed in the animation.
I think Macarini is like, this scene is leisurely. he goes that far to call it leisurely.
The only clip I really do like is... you see glimmers of what the show would become is Homer's exchange with Marge when she tells them they're going to the opera.
So I got tickets to the opera tonight. Hurry up, get dressed. It starts at 8.
Oh, Mom, not tonight.
Come on, Bart. Your mother's only trying to help, so go ahead and enjoy the show.
Homer, you're going too.
But I'm not a genius. Why should I suffer?
the opera scene does have the thing I've noted as my favorite joke.
That is my. It is. We can do that now. Or we can do it later. But
why don't we save that then?
It is my line of the show.
But here's something that you can give. All right. So let's give this. You were saying Bobby didn't want to tear it down too much.
Right.
No, I don't.
In the comment, but I was going to say let's give them a lot of slack because in the commentary they say David Silverman said this is the first half hour anything he'd ever produced.
Period. Yeah, I did watch that commentary.
And that John Vitti, the writer who's written some of the greatest episodes ever of The Simpsons, he also said that this was the first 30-minute thing he'd ever written.
I give it shit because, like, when I was a kid, I didn't know about the production order fiasco. To take
such
a downgrade and, like, to view this as the actual pilot, like, I don't think anybody could have predicted this becoming a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And everybody involved with the show was still there and made it better. So, yeah, to their credit. I don't want to trash people and say, like, this is terrible.
We're at episode 2. By, like, episode 4 or 5, like, the colors start being more consistent. The animation looks better. The voice acting is better.
Well, I keep telling people listening to this, watch these episodes because, like, I have avoided watching them for so long.
Oh, me too, yeah.
Well, it just shows you how much they learned in production. Like, we'll talk about it, too, when we get to Bart the General. But, so, Bart the Genius and Bart the General were directed back-to-back by Dave Silverman.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's got to be so much goddamn
work. He talks about how he was killing himself, and he also says he doesn't give himself too hard a time because he's like, I shouldn't have been working this hard. But so he's doing this one, and then immediately Bart the General, and you can see the upgrade, at least from backgrounds, already. You can see them already learning their lessons, like, these backgrounds suck. Like, you didn't draw the floor meeting the wall. You didn't do any of this shit.
If you're an animation fan and you're a fan of pre-1980s animation, it's because there's usually a consistency. And, like, they're watching the show struggle with its own consistency. Mm. It's at this level.
And on the commentary, they mentioned they didn't have a production designer, which is, like, the props in the background look like this. The backgrounds look like this. But it seems like anyone doing any given scene was just like, okay, this is what a cereal box looks like. This is what Krusty looks like for now. Like,
well, if you just paint it on the background, they're like, well, it's painted there. We can't undo it. I guess that's what a tree looks like.
Yeah.
I guess we're hideous. Stuck with that. Yeah. They mentioned, too, that there was a line about Jane Goodall, and Jane Goodall reached out to them and sent them a letter like, thanks for mentioning me.
Oh, I think
she sent John Vitti a book, but he wasn't that happy because Al Jean actually wrote the line about Bart wanting to study the stupid children Jane Goodall.
So what they mentioned in here, too, is one thing that made me really regret that Sam Simon couldn't be involved in these commentaries, because they say Sam Simon, the first 3 years, he is as much responsible for shaping the show into what it was as anybody. And they talk about how John Vitti says he turned in a 71-page script, which is about double the length a script for a television show should be. Mm-hmm. It should really be 1 minute per page, been heard. So he turned in a 71-page script, and Sam and Matt hacked it down like themselves, and they just worked so hard to even get it into an arable thing.
Oh, so Sam Simon never did... commentaries.
He was on the outs with Matt the whole time.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
It feels like the commentaries
were bad blood. He talked about leaving the third season.
I mean, he also probably just says, I feel no... You listen to his Mark Maron interview. He feels no nostalgia for it.
Shit, there's supposed to be an interview he said he recorded to be played at his death. So where he names names.
Well, I mean, I read the not-so-great oral history of The Simpsons, which has involvement from, like, 5 people. And it seems like Sam Simon was mad because Matt Groening had the ultimate narrative. Like, the hippie that made good. Mm-hmm. This counterculture guy that made a cartoon that everyone watches. But really, Matt Groening didn't do that much work. I mean, he did a lot, of it, but people like Sam Simon and James L. Brooks.
Brooks did something in the first season.
Yeah, Al Brooks was there,
James Brooks was the Judd Apatow of his day.
Yeah.
Sam Simon was the... I believe the youngest. Well, I remember he was the youngest showrunner.
In history.
I don't like old sitcoms that much, despite what Nick at Night would have me believe in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. But Taxi is one of those things I discovered through there. Like, that show is excellent, and it's because of Sam Simon. Mm-hmm. And like, you can, if you ever get bored, watch Taxi and see how that informed The Simpsons. Like, a really great look at distinguished characters interacting with one another.
And
it's
Sam
really
Simon
good.
Brought that to it, and then. Yeah, I think the narrative I'm believing more so is that Matt Groening was the spark of it. There'd be no Simpsons if Matt Groening hadn't been asked by James L. Brooks to make a cartoon for his sketch show.
But he asked him to make Life in Hell, and I think they all probably had an equal hand in shaping the
and
Simpsons.
So yeah, then they just kind of stumbled into the Simpsons. Mm-hmm. Matt drew the characters. Then David Silverman, Wes Archer, and Greg Moore.
Daniels.
Three directors came on. Rich Moore, Wes Archer, and David Silverman. They came on. They animated the first three episodes of the first season. Mm-hmm. They shaped that, but then Sam Simon was also an artist. Like, he designed Mr. Burns, and it's just this thing they try to undercut all the time. And
it's one of those things I try not to think about as a Simpsons fan. Like, how much did, if I wanted to, I could probably dig into how much did Groening have to do with any of the success?
I don't want to downplay him too much, because if you look at the extras on the DVDs, like, up to a certain point, Groening is making notes on, like, every storyboard page. Like, notes and drawings. Like, he wants to, like, have input on everything.
Well, and he definitely has notes on, like, anytime there's bad tears on the screen, like, in this episode, he's like, oh, those tears. Well, look at those trumpet mouths.
Listening to those commentaries and... in like 2001 was he was like basically teaching you about animation. Like, yeah, it's a really good like crash course in how to make a good animated show.
Yeah. Okay. This is a new thing I want to bring up. But so did all of us take gifted courses in school? Were we all in them?
I did. I had to go to a special trailer because smart kids are not allowed in school.
I resent the whole program now. Like, I'm not talking to a therapist. If I were, like,
this is your therapy.
Have I said this on another show? Like, I was put in gifted, and I do remember, like, my fucking parents would hand me workbooks, and like I'd fill out math workbooks and writing workbooks. So I stepped into kindergarten knowing how to read, not knowing the next 3 years is you learning how to read.
I had the exact same
thing. So I sat there bored. I think when you talk about attention deficit disorder, I learned to stop paying attention because, like, my parents didn't allow me to grow like a normal kid. Like, they weren't ready.
You were too ready for American school
system. I had to
system.
Check yeah. out my first 4 years of school. I had to check out because I knew all that shit already. I was just falling asleep. Mm-hmm. And that's defined the idiot asshole you see before you right now.
Mine wasn't as like open and free as Bart's school, but I went to those classes where it's like, you get to leave normal class, come to this trailer, play Carmen Sandiego, look at some flashcards, who cares, you're smart.
What the fuck was that about, that we got to play video games?
That was
the kids
awesome.
It was too open, but that was mine too, that it was, okay, this is your gifted class, go away and do this fun stuff here. And I think it did more harm than good for me as a student, because the message to me was, you're better than these people.
Yes.
You're smarter than
naturally.
Them. And you don't need to focus. And so I was like, I don't need to focus.
Undid me in high school. It's like, I have to learn how to study now?
It undid me around Bart's grade.
Fourth grade.
Wait, I have to, like, this guy wants, I knew how to write and read. I didn't know anything about history. I wasn't reading history books. Like, wait, you wanted me to remember that? I'm so used to just being forced to sit here all day.
Yeah, and I knew lots of gifted kids who just said they had like gifted kid syndrome, they were told they were special and they didn't try as hard.
I made a huge statement in seventh grade of quitting gifted because we would go to this thing called ARC where we're bussed away to another place to be mad at this kind of privilege I experienced. Be mad, everybody. Where we go and like literally learn computers when no public school could afford computers. They shipped us to an area to learn the future. And
that was like the trailer outside my school.
They shipped us off to like a college campus every Friday. And then like in middle school, it's like, well, you're special, so you have to do, you're going to get your coursework from your teachers for the classes you're not attending and also go over to this other advanced building and do that work too. And I'm like, you're separating me from my friends and telling me I have to do extra work. I'm quitting. And like it became a thing. Like, how can someone quit gifted? No one's done it before. And I quit.
I quit on this one.
Seventh grade.
Well, the gifted, you know, looking back on it, it feels like the government only had enough money to give the right teaching to 20 kids.
It's awful. It's awful.
For school.
Yeah. And the test that got me into it was not an IQ test. What got me into it was that I was testing better in my classes, but it felt, now I look back on it, it was like what Chris said to me, it was just a trick. Like, they showed, here's addition and subtraction, do all these problems, they gave us 30 minutes, I did it in 5 and turned it in, the teacher couldn't believe it. But that was just because it clicked with my brain. It wasn't
you figured out the trick too.
I deeply resent it.
But then there was another one of like, the test I always remember when I moved to Florida to join their gifted program, like, okay, here are 40 colored little toy bears we're putting down here. Separate all the blue ones. I was like, or count them or something. I was like, there's 30 of them. And they're like,
I remember having a discussion, like being assigned, like I got moved into this other classroom, and then for some reason during the day, my parents were in a classroom, and I assembled a Marble Works thing while they talked to a teacher. I don't remember taking any test, but I'll tell you what we didn't do. We didn't have a fucking fourth grade discussion on paradoxes.
I did want
to. When we left off, Calvin and Tanya were arguing that free will is an illusion.
If you ask me, humankind has freedom, but a freedom fraught with paradoxes. Freud shows how childhood shapes our subconscious mind, but this helps us to think for ourselves.
Very good, Ian. Does anyone else have an example of a paradox?
Without law and order, man has no freedom.
If you want peace, you must prepare for war.
Well, it seems the smartest child in the class is also the quietest. Bart, what other paradoxes affect our lives?
Slow!
Well, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't.
And when it's also, it also is to be
was everywhere.
It's an example of like the fucking Ivy League writers not being able to balance their humor with their education.
Well, they were told to write smart kids, so they wrote smart. Yeah.
Well, this reminded, like, this made me think Bart is actually insightful. It's a very Vonnegut thing to say in the moment.
Oh, I love you, Bob.
And also, not to go too much, I mean, we talked about personal experiences, but this reminds me of being, I went to public school for 4 years and then went to Catholic school in fourth grade.
Oh, goodness.
And I was immediately like, obligated to know all this Catholic stuff, like prayers.
Ooh, geez.
And like just walking, like no one.
Who fought the Battle of Jericho?
St. Francis, I guess.
Joshua, no, fuck Bob.
So I was just saying prayers like phonetically until I was able to look them up because no one was like, of course you know this. I mean, it was weird, but this reminded me of that situation.
You got good grades, but have you prayed Jesus into your heart?
I don't know the act of contrition. I'm
also,
sorry.
Also, that clip reminded me of another of my notes, which was, the children voices in this are atrocious. And Bart the General, but like they're just two people.
I'm a kid on the Simpsons.
Yeah. I'm Nancy with a slightly different voice.
I also have a note that like, oh man, everything is, these are all caps for my drunk notes. Everything is rough. Every color is wrong. Milhouse's hair is literally like it starts out too dark and then just goes stark black.
Yeah. Oh man, like there's a color correction problem on this episode because like at some point the whites are gray.
Yeah.
And it's like just a dingy, like bleak, awful show.
Skinner's jacket is purple.
Yeah.
That seems like a missed action figure, like Comic-Con exclusive action figure opportunity.
And then when Bart turns green at the end, it's almost like they fuck it up though. Like he's not, the green and yellows meet in the middle of the couple scenes.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, but not remembering it well. But I remember, like, why isn't this just colored? It looks like you literally colored him green on top of yellow because we're seeing bits of yellow.
I will say Nancy Cartwright, I think she did a good job in some scenes when she had to.
Yeah.
That was also a running thing I noticed in the early episodes, that they thought it was really funny to have voiceover over somebody writing. They're like, this is a hilarious trick.
Oh, man, I was going to point that out, Henry, because just watching this, I'm like, the performance is good, but we are watching a character write a letter for 2 minutes.
It's very Peanuts.
And when Pryor picks up the confession, he just says, oh, you spelled confession wrong. They could have cut that entire letter writing scene entirely and just had him like cut right to that.
I do. I wanted to compliment.
You know, that would have made it so much a smarter joke, just to smash, like you spelled confession
a
wrong.
A good Simpsons visual gag. Bart is the most gifted student in the world. He goes in that guy's office to turn in a confession and say that he cheated and he's not actually smart. And on his wall is a picture of Albert Einstein and Bart.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a good early Simpsons visual gag.
That's a nice little visual gag, but yeah, it's a lot of just tell and don't show. Like, just over-explain so much.
I mean, there's pathos in sitting with Bart as he just, like, struggles with becoming, like, coming out of his lie.
Mm-hmm.
But still, I think it would have been more effective if we just cut to that, like Chris was saying, just smash cut to the scene where it's like, oh, you were lying.
And
get out of here.
So there was, like, 5 seconds of greatness in this episode, which is the very last thing you see. Because the joke that closes it is Homer saying, I just want to hug you and kiss you, make you feel better. You think I'm dumb enough to believe that? See, that's a traditional capper. Oh, you think I'm stupid enough to believe that? I've been dumb this whole episode, blah, blah, blah. But it's Homer's reaction to slamming on the door, like, it's his rage.
Well, Bart confessed, Dad, I cheated, and I'm so embarrassed. And, like, we're in 1980, or we're in 1990. That scene would end with a hug, like, I'm not mad at you, son. Mm-hmm. Instead, it ends with, like, fuck you, I'm extremely mad, I'm going to strangle you.
It is a subversion.
It set the tone to me for later episodes of The Simpsons, but not this one.
That moment was a subversion in the most like obvious sense of Full House would end with a hug, this guy still wants to beat his child.
That like, so this kind of like disturbed me from a 2015 perspective. Like like later on they would not linger on the parent on child violence, but there was like maybe a minute of Homer attempting to hit Bart or hurt him in some way, and Bart just locks himself in his room. But I think the animation,
it was disturbing that he was naked
while naked and green.
That too, but while naked and green. But I think the animation saves it. There's a great scene, I think, that saves the episode of Homer just freaking out and slamming himself against the door. That I think it's a Jim Reardon scene.
Who is
maybe
one of the best Simpsons animators ever. He did, I think his tour de force episode is the Homer has a heart attack one, right?
That's David Silverman. Oh, that's Mr. Plow and Homer
Mr.
Goes
Plow,
to College.
That's right. Yeah, Mr. Plow and Goes to College. Yeah.
But
the movement on Homer in that scene, and I also noticed in most of these, when Homer has to scream or get really angry, he can't do the Walter Matthau voice anymore, and he becomes the Homer we know.
Yeah, I think that's where it started.
And the more they make him scream, the more he becomes
that
Homer.
We keep listening, I think I found the first example of the first Homer scream.
Nice.
Yes. Yes. So in later, it's later in some episode. Do we want to do the line of the show?
Well, my line of the show. Well, you play with yours. It might be the same.
Look,
as mine.
I am the authority here, Henry, because I capture the clips and I'm buying time while I queue it up.
Okay.
Because I don't mean any of that. Well, but here we go.
That's the joke.
that would it makes me it made that me laugh makes- then. It makes me laugh now.
P.U., when is this over?
It ain't over till the fat lady sings.
Is that one bad enough for you, son?
I like drawn terribly.
It
doesn't look like she's in the same universe.
Is that Homer's, is that one fat enough for you? Is a great line to some, a term I didn't even fucking understand.
Yeah.
And like Simpsons gave context to it ain't over till the fat lady sings.
Yeah.
And that line is great, but it also is, I kept the end in, it's the only time The Simpsons pause to laugh at funny things they're saying.
Entertained by themselves.
Lisa was getting in on it too, even though she was there to enjoy the opera.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa would have liked the opera.
In this time, they couldn't decide if Lisa was as rowdy as Bart or smarter in Bart and creative.
Well, I think they were trying to skirt the line of like, she's a genius, but she's still a child. And a fart noise is funnier than
eight.
A fat lady
she's
singing.
Eight.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, my favorite one comes a little before that, and it's just because it's a little moment and maybe isn't even that funny, but when Homer says, no popcorn, no opera dogs. But then you imagine there's a thing called opera. They're not hot dogs there. They're opera
correct.
Dogs.
You're absolutely correct. I should have grabbed that one.
That's a very Homer. That's a late Homer thing.
That is a pure Simpsons quote.
Yeah.
My favorite line is not even a great line. It's just so understated and something they would never do. It's when Homer kisses Bart when he drops him off at the gifted school. And Bart's just like, you kissed me. And Homer goes, well, every father kisses boy. At least I hope so. Like, just like that one little moment where Bart is dealing with actual affection, doesn't know what to do. It just is very, very
That
telling.
Was a weird scene where he like Homer turns to camera, basically the audience basically say, I think so.
Yeah, I think that was just like an audience nudge.
Oh, and I did like we didn't even talk about I Am a Wiener, which is like one of the most lasting things from this episode.
Yeah.
And that I did like the line where Martin says, traditionally, it's spelled W-I-E-N-E-R, though...
Said the creator of Mad Men from now until the end of time.
But then he said, though W-E-I is a acceptable ethnic variation.
Yeah.
And then Skinner just goes, yes.
of course. But shit, I think we're spent.
I don't think there's any dead people to
there
mention.
There are not.
On
there is
one.
Just Marsha Wallace. That's it.
Yeah.
Do we want to give her the dead jingle then?
I think so. All I mean, she's going to be showing up a lot, but
she's one of the only people who are attached to one character and just an inimitable character that has one of the only characters that's been retired.
Yeah.
But Marcia Wallace.
Death stalks you at every turn. There it is. Death.
Miss Krabappel.
That's so respectful. There it is. Of her memory.
Thank you so much. Thank you
for all the smiles and tears.
I have an interesting dead thing to bring up in the next episode.
Cool.
Oh, boy.
Yes. When we're going to look at Homer's Odyssey, I believe.
Oh, boy.
Oh boy.
That's not a favorite of mine.
We'll have a lot of thoughts on that, I think.
It's my favorite of the first four.
Really?
Like outside of the Christmas special.
Okay, if you can't. Okay, so you mean Bart the Genius, Homer's Odyssey, Bart the General, and No Disgrace. Home. Then I think Bart the General is still my favorite. But
mine may be No Disgrace.
We will
based on the psychiatry scene, but you'll hear about that later.
We will get that next time. Thank you, Patreon donators.
Yeah,
seriously.
Thanks, patrons.
Thanks so much.
I have been Chris. You can find me Cantista on Twitter.
I'm Henry Gilbert, H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G on Twitter.
I am Bob Servo on Twitter, and check out my other podcast, Retronauts, the classic gaming podcast, retronauts.com or usgamer.net, your choice.
Such a great, I love that podcast.
And
thank you.
Yes, this has been Talking Simpsons. You can eventually find us at what website?
We go to lasertime.com, correct?
That's
patreon.com/lasertime.
Eventually talkingsimpsons.com.
Oh, I didn't know there was a URL. I was not briefed on this.
We bought it, but this is for Patreon donors only until the second season.
Yeah, but thanks, everybody. We have parting words.
Rub-a-dub-dub, thanks for the grub.
Yeah, that'll work.